Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't hear.
She's right there.
Oh, there you are. There you are. Okay.
So, before we get started, I have a mouthful of sweet tarts. My blood sugar is going down.
Uh-oh.
So, as a reminder, before we begin our meeting, I would like to remind you all that we are audio recording this meeting. Just audio. And so welcome everyone to our September 7, 2022 meeting of the Clark County Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board. We have a number of you here with us on Zoom and a couple of us here in the room live and in person. And so to start our meeting, do we have any community input?
I do.
Okay. I'm not sure who said that. Is that you, Darla?
Patrick did.
Patrick. Oh, hello, Patrick.
Patrick said that. Patrick is finally got his house sold in Woodland, and I bought another one in Kalama. Unfortunately, with me living in Kalama, the sad thing is that my term's coming to an end this December, so I'm going to step down.
I'm so sorry to hear that, Patrick. We have really enjoyed and appreciated all of your insights and presence and input as a member of our board.
It's not that I want to leave, but because of the county, the way the county's set up and with the boundaries and stuff, I'm not in Clark. I'm in Cowlitz now. So it's fortunate. I'll talk to Trish about that because I told her I was concerned with me moving, and I knew that this was something that was going to take place eventually, and it has. So,
well,
which
I'm
is...
To do the same thing in Cowlitz.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely see what Cowlitz has to offer because I'm not done by a long shot. There's no way I'll give up doing, you know, if I can't do it in Clark, I know I can do it in Cowlitz.
Okay.
You know, and I know lots of people in Cowlitz County. But yeah, I've moved and I'm still transitioning because it's still a mess trying to figure out boxes, what's what. Any of you have moved, you know what that's like. So, yeah, it's a slow process, but, you know, it's getting there.
So Vietnamese,
and it's a really nice house. I love it.
Vietnamese have a good proverb about moving. They say three moves is the same as having five.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm still looking for things. I'm like, good grief. Where did all this stuff come from? I'm thinking in my mind, how can you have so much, you know? But yeah, we're still in transition. I'm enjoying the new house. Because it's, like I said, it's a pretty sweet place. I really enjoy it a lot. And it's quiet. It's got a deck on the front and a deck on the back so I can barbecue in the summertime.
We need to.
All right, Patrick, thank you so much. And then, Lindy Treese, congratulations. I heard some dialogue going on with your colleagues that you are now Lindy Treese MSW. And when we did our meeting agenda, Lindy, I know last month you began our meeting with a special fact about the anniversary of ADA. Did you have a special fact you wanted to share with us today? I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, I mean, I'm always full of special facts, I guess. So until about, I think it was 1973, it was kind of illegal to be disabled in public. It was considered affront to the people of cities. And these were called colloquially the ugly laws. If you want to ever delve into that part of our history, it is very ugly. So they were aptly named.
Did Darla have a comment, or she had her hand up? Darla had her hand up.
Oh, Darla, I'm sorry. Was your hand up?
I just had some community input, if you've got time for it. Okay. So PEACE, in collaboration with many other organizations around the state, is hosting three screenings of the documentary Unseen. This is a documentary that focuses on parents of children with exceptional needs and how the service system and the needs of the individual, how the parent just ends up getting lost in that, and that while we love our children and we would do anything for our children, the fact that we have to struggle to get their needs met within the service systems and the pressures that puts on families. Anyway, it's about 30 minutes. It's being shown around the state. There's three opportunities. I think the county has sent it out, but I can make sure that they have it to send to you. And then there's going to be some panel discussion after the meeting, after the viewing. So we can kind of talk about what's the next step and how do we move forward to change this reality. We also have a training coming up on September the 24th on IEP skills. This is with Michael Grinder, and it's going to be focused on communication skills in an IEP setting. And then I'm very excited to announce, and Katrina is here with us, our newest PEACE employee, Katrina Boyce, has started a People First for Southwest Washington, and she is helping to host People First and bring SAIL down to Southwest Washington. So we're very excited for that. The meeting for People First in SAIL is on. Katrina, do you have that on the top of your head?
Yes, always. SAIL meetings are the second Tuesday of every month, from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. And then the People First meetings are the first and third Tuesday from 4:30 to 6. So I can put my email in the chat as well.
Excellent, thank you. We also still are continuing our once a month home training so that individuals interested in housing opportunities have that ongoing training to learn different aspects. And then we're starting a new group called Meet in the Middle, and this is really focused for parents who have kiddos either going into middle school or transitioning from middle school to high school, so that late elementary school to early high school years, kind of that stage. All of our other programs are continuing and restarting up for the year, and we're just very excited to be bringing what we believe individuals and families need to Southwest Washington. So thank you.
Thank you, Darla. Are there any other hands up with community input? I'm looking to my left because I can see that screen better. Walt?
Yes, I have some very good news for the community. I'm a member of the Community in Motion Transportation Agency Board of Directors, and we have recently accepted Darla as one of our newest members. And the reason why it's important to the group is that she will be able to advocate for people with cognitive and intellectual disabilities and their transportation needs. And I'm very proud to have her on the board. I'm the treasurer of that particular organization at this time. And if you'd like to know more information about Community in Motion, please let me know or let Darla know. Thank you.
And when, Ted,
when
is your head of home?
Go on. When is Darla going to be our governor?
I'll vote for her right now.
Oh, you guys are funny.
I'll second that nominee.
Okay, any other community input? Are we ready to move on with our agenda? I don't see any other hands all right, so our first agenda item is our National Disability Employment Awareness Month committee just information.
Yeah.
The committee has been continuing to meet and plan. We received several amazing nominations for our awards this year that we have been going over. And hot off the presses, I was just handed another document that the event is going to be on October 5th this year, 2022, from 4 to 6 p.m. And we will be holding our event at Clark College, so actual in-person, at Geyser Hall. So they're very big meeting room, and so you are welcome to join us. We won't be able to do a hybrid meeting where people can interact with the group, but we will be live streamed for those who prefer to watch from home. And so that is new. Usually CBTV records and then eventually posts it, but it will be live streamed. So that is a new component this year. So hopefully we will be able to see you at Clark College on October 5th.
And if, you need help with registering, you can email us at dd.program@clark.wa.gov and we'll get you all the details and information about how to register for that.
Trish? Does that include information for streaming purposes? I'll be out of town, so, but I will have internet so I can watch it.
Oh, great. Yeah, that'd be wonderful. Yes, we are asking for registrations just so that we know how many people will be showing up in person. We want to make sure that there's plenty of room for some social distancing. There will be, you know, COVID protocols asking people about, you know, if you've had any exposures and if you have any symptoms and that kind of thing, that we want people to be screened prior to coming. And that's actually a Clark College requirement for us to have the event there. But we are also asking people to register. And when you register, you'll be indicating if you'll be there in person or with us online.
And there will also be opportunities to promote the event at city and county council meetings. As we have done in the past, we will be able to accept proclamations that have been created in honor of the event. And so we'll be reaching out to board members to receive those proclamations at meetings, as well as we're working on dates for school board meetings to try to get into the school boards and invite members of the school boards as well. So more to come on that. Okay, our next agenda item, community needs assessment. And Michael and Rebecca, are you both here? I can't, my view of the screen is very limited.
Hi, yes, this is Michael Torres with Clark County Community Services, and Rebecca and I are both here.
Hi, my name is Rebecca, and I am a program coordinator with Clark County Community Services. And I'm here to give a presentation on our community needs assessment that was published earlier last year and then translated and settled languages and really released out into the community this year. So I'm going to share my screen. My presentation is really long, and I know I have a limited amount of time, so I'm going to briefly go over certain slides in the presentation, but know that you're getting a copy of this so you can dig deeper into the information. So the community needs assessment is a way for us to hear about the needs and gaps in services directly from people in need in our community. It's targeted to people who are low income to respond and participate in our needs assessment process. It also helps us understand the causes and conditions surrounding poverty in our community. And then this is also a requirement of our community services block grant funding. So there's specific funding there that we need that requires us to put this report together. To put the report together, we work with a lot of different partnerships. It's actually about an 18-month long process that we go through to do the full assessment. We include or work closely with the Community Needs Assessment Task Force, which includes members from our Community Action Advisory Board, and then community advocates, and different community partners, including David Henson with Clark County Public Health. So we have a variety of people attending and participating in the process that we have. We also work with a research consultant, Rachel Williams with Applied Research Northwest, oversees all of the data that we collect and looks for bias in and just verifies that the data that we have is good data to use for our report. We also worked this year with Jackie St. Louis to consult with us to draft the assessment. And then we worked with over 100 different partner agencies, community groups, and coalitions in part to distribute the survey of needs that we use as part of our community assessment, and then also to do outreach about the community forums that we had for the program.
Now, I have a question around that.
Okay.
If I may, does that include housing needs? Because as most people know, the housing market, you know, when you're low income, they require you to have more than what you actually need to either rent a place or they require like 3 or 4 times the need for people who require housing that want to go into housing. And sometimes, you know, that's a hardship because you've got to decide, okay, do I eat or do I pay for my house? Which is it?
Absolutely. So, survey that we start with, that we put out into the community, is actually broken down into 50 different areas to try to understand the needs under those big categories. Those include housing, employment, education, physical health, behavioral health, general support services, and I think I'm missing asset and income development. So we break that down in the survey and ask about the needs of each of those categories. And then we'll talk about the data that we received about that here a little bit later in the presentation.
Well, these
folks can. To do the needs assessment, I just wanted to give you kind of a brief process overview of what we did for the whole thing, because it is quite the undertaking. First, we started with the survey of needs, which I was just talking about, that's distributed out into the community. We do the consult review of that data. Then we provide that data back out to the community, the general community, through feedback forums. And then we look at a lot of different other assessments that are provided throughout the community to kind of assess the take on different aspects of what could be impacting our communities that are struggling financially. And then we put the full report together and have it adopted by the Community Action Advisory Board, which is the board that oversees the funding, the Community Services Block Grant funding. So now I'm going to go into some general results that we found when we were doing the needs assessment. Again, I'm going to go pretty fast through this, but we'll provide information out to you, and please don't hesitate to ask questions.
Hey, Rebecca, do you mind if I very quickly interject something?
Yes. No, I don't mind.
So just to be very clear, when we're talking about results on the survey of needs, that's not a result of analysis of this is what is needed in this community. This is results meaning what the low-income households that responded to the survey hold us for their needs and their priorities.
It's very important for us to hear about the needs of the families in our community directly. And this is one of the best ways that we have been able to get that information on a broad scale. So as I mentioned before, there's many different categories that we ask about in the needs assessment. So the first one that we'll talk about is our housing category. We received 1,665 responses to the survey of needs when we had that out. It was pre-pandemic. And we released it in November 1st of 2019 through January 31st of 2020. So it was available for 90 days. It was available hard copy and online. And it was available online in English, Spanish, Russian, Vietnamese. And then it was available in hard copy in English, Spanish, Russian, Vietnamese, and Chukchi. We weren't able to do Chukchi online because of technical abilities of the software that we were using at the time. And this was one of the assets that was worked with the community partners to distribute through a lot of different partners, nonprofit agencies, and community groups throughout the community to get it out. And so having 1,665 responses is a pretty good turnout. And it's about their household, so we wouldn't expect each individual to return a survey to us. With the housing category, we had 765 respondents say that they had a need for housing assistance. And then they were able to break down what that need was within the needs identified in the survey. The top three identified needs were affordable housing, rent assistance, and funding housing IQ rent. We also asked about barriers to getting their needs met. Were asked throughout this entire survey. The majority of people said they didn't know where to go, they didn't qualify, or they didn't have access to getting to first. Our physical health category had 698 responses, and the top three identified needs for that category were seeing a dentist, paying for dental services, and paying for health services such as co-pays and the extra costs that come with having access to health insurance. And then the top three barriers were don't know where to go, do not qualify, and getting services. And as we go along, you'll notice that the barriers, the top three barriers that were identified are gonna be similar, but in different orders based on the number of responses that they have. Under our behavioral health category, we had 479 respondents indicate that they had a need for them or someone in their family, with the top three identified needs being access to mental health services, access to counseling, such as marriage, family, or life counseling, and then paying for services with those co-pays. And again, the top three barriers were not knowing where to go, getting to those services, or not qualifying for those. When asked about employment needs, 705 respondents indicated that someone in their family had needs, with the top three identified needs being finding a job, getting a better job, and transportation to and from employment. And again, those barriers were still don't know where to go, getting services, and do not qualify. When asked about income and asset building, we had 660 responses, with the top three identified needs being credit repair, financial planning or budgeting classes, and financial assistance to buy a home. And then the top three barriers are again, don't know where to go, do not qualify, or getting services. Under education, the top, we had 565 responses, with the top three needs being financial assistance to go to college, post-secondary education support, and applying for financial aid and scholarship. And then our last category is our support services category, with 632 responses and the top three identified needs being paying for vehicle costs, such as maintenance and insurance, paying for general transportation for bus passes or gas assistance, and then information and referral services. So as part of the research that we do for the community needs assessment, we look at and try to understand what the causes and conditions of poverty are here in our community. And so these are just some of the different things that we found as we were doing that research. Lack of sufficient affordable housing, housing discrimination, poverty and poor health conditions that are frequently correlated together, conventional beliefs about physical health and behavioral health being separate are inaccurate. Clark County's unemployment rate has been slightly higher than the national average historically as we were doing the research for this community needs assessment. We noted that Clark County's economic data revealed disparities in wages by age, gender, education, and race. We noticed that there are many households that are unbanked or underbanked. We noticed that disability and poverty have a bi-directional relationship, which means that disability is a cause but also a consequence of poverty. We noted the cost of higher education. And we also noticed that public transportation is insufficient, especially in our rural areas. So a big part of the CNA is understanding the populations that are completing the survey. So we put together a bunch of information on the demographics of the agents, of the people responding. I'm not going to go through all of these. These are all available on our website, and I'll put a link to the needs assessment and all of the information that we have in the chat for you. And it's also noted on one of the final slides. But we do ask to understand the people responding to our survey, what their age is, what their gender, race. This is also tied to race to give an understanding of how the people responding to our service match with the total number of people in poverty in Clark County. We've asked about ethnicity, we asked about levels of education, family size, primary language used in the home, how many children under 18, how many seniors, what kind of health insurance the family has, what source of income, and what is their current or last known zip code. This is just a map to kind of show that the people responding to the survey is throughout all of Clark County, not just focused in like the greater Vancouver area, although that is where we are most populated and have more responses from. We also asked if they have a family member who served in the armed forces. We asked if they have a family member who has a disability or special needs. We asked about their current housing situation. This one I'll call out, we have staying with friends or family, which is also commonly known as couch surfing, and houseless and homeless tied as the same color on our chart because HUD only considers people who are literally homeless as homeless. They don't consider staying with friends or family as literally homeless. But there are different funding streams that do identify staying with friends or family as a type of at-risk of homelessness. We ask about employment in their households and what their income is for their family size. This is important for us because the Community Service Block Grant Fund serves households up to 125% of the federal poverty level. And so we just want to have a better understanding of who's responding to our survey and make sure that it's appropriate for the responses that we use for our full needs assessment. So some of the lessons that we learned as we went through our CNA process, we learn new things every year. We work to improve the process of our needs assessment. And so this last time, we learned that access is really important to make sure that we have access in multiple languages and then also online and hard copy. We learned that we need a variety of partnerships to work with to create connections with under-resourced communities through trusted sources, and that outreach through different social service programs is important to be able to reach throughout the entire community. We learned that we needed a variety of community forums. We did virtual this last time because of the pandemic. Previously, we had done only in person, and so now we want to make sure that this next time we're able to do both in person and virtual to make sure that access is available. And if we're doing in person, that we have them in diverse locations so that we can make sure we reach out to the rural areas of our community. And that focus groups needed to get more, are needed so that we can get more qualitative data and better understanding of the needs by taking the survey responses and talking with them more to have a better understanding of what is, the gaps in those services are. So I mentioned that we have our community needs assessment available on our website. It is available in all 5 languages, and you can request a copy through a link in our website and send me an email. Let me know what language you would prefer and how many copies, and we'll make sure we get those out to you. All the supporting information is available, all the appendices that we use, the forum recordings, the documents used in the forum, the survey response data. If you love data, like I do, there is an Excel spreadsheet that is available. It's thousands of lines long, thousands of columns wide. Not really thousands, but hundreds. It is a very large spreadsheet. But you can really break it down and try and decipher information out of what those responses are. So that is also available. We provide that deeper dive into the overview of the process that we use for the needs assessment, and then also how you can get involved if you would like to help us with our next CNA, which we are getting underway. An email will be going out into the community to request members for our community needs assessment task force. So hopefully we can get that out to you guys if you're interested in participating and helping us improve the community needs assessment process that we're doing now. And that is everything that I have.
Thank you, Rebecca, for trying to be thorough yet expeditious in your presentation. That was a lot of information to absorb. Does anyone have questions for either Michael or Rebecca? You can go ahead and unmute if you have one.
We'll make sure that the presentation is available on the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board website, as well as the link that you just posted.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So this is Michael again, with Park County Community Services. A couple things I want to say quickly. You know, number one is really this effort on the assessing what the needs are for our low-income families in our community. When I say community, we really mean the geographic boundaries of Clark County. It's very much been led and spearheaded by Rebecca. You know, there are a lot of, you know, good teammates and partners and community members that have really contributed to putting this together and making it happen. And I'd say, you know, Rebecca deserves, like, a lot of the credit for the quality of the information that we have available. We use this information for funding decisions. So, you know, what happens is our unit within community services, we oversee the federal, state, and local funds that go into anti-poverty human service programs, homelessness, the homeless system, creation and preservation of affordable housing stock, and low-income neighborhood community infrastructure and what we call indigent services for indigent veterans, which really means military veterans that live in poverty. And when we award funding for those things, we generally procure services through a request for proposals or request for applications. And what it is that we are soliciting is informed by this community assessment. So that's what we do with this information, other than pass it to other funders such as the Community Foundation of Southwest Washington, Peace Health, Kaiser Foundation, City of Vancouver, you know, other cities, you know, other foundations, entities that provide funding to services that help people who live in poverty. And the last thing I just wanted to say and throw out is, thank you, Darla, and Keith. They are one of the organizations that really helped us distribute the surveys and get the word out and get, you know, the number of surveys that we had returned. You know, very, very helpful. And, you know, when Rebecca put the map of the county you could see that every single zip code in the county had multiple surveys returned. And that really is because, you know, we partnered and reached out with over 100 different organizations. Darla and Keith were one of those, so thank you very much.
I'd
like to have a nice shout out to Darla. Thank you for being part of a data collection effort that, you know, is really looking at policy-driven solutions for poverty among people with disabilities. The other thing, you know, I'm a professor at UNC Vancouver, and so, you know, we have partnerships on campus that serve veterans, that serve people with disabilities, but I was both glad but also a little sad to see that, you know, people feel like maybe higher education is part of a need that isn't being met. And so as part of somebody who works on campus, whatever I could do to facilitate people who are, you know, looking to get connected to higher education, who are veterans, who may have other kinds of connections on campus that, you know, we don't really always think of as, you know, coming to a higher education environment, I would be happy to help us. So thank you again. Data Geek to Data Geek. I appreciate what you guys are doing, and thank you for doing it.
Yeah. And then Bob has a comment or a question.
I want to thank you for sharing that. As I quickly watched through the slides, I was very impressed with the amount of demographic data that you got in the survey. I think it's very unusual to be able to elicit things such as income and other things about an individual when they're just filling out an anonymous survey. Was there any tricks or techniques that you used to encourage those kinds of responses?
Really, it's the community partnership. It's the agencies that we work with that they already have a trusted relationship with, saying, hey, we would really appreciate it if you would fill this out because this is really going to impact the community. And then turning around and making sure that the people that are interested in receiving information from the full report get that information so that they know that what the time that they took to fill out the application was worth it, that we weren't just taking information and putting it on the shelf. We really do, I always talk about it, taking my presentation on the road to get it back out in the community so people know what's going on, what the needs are, where they might be seeing gaps. The demographic information is a fantastic tool for understanding and dispelling myths that are out there in the community. One of the biggest myths is that people that have a low income are not working or they're lazy, and we can show that because the majority of the people responding to surveys have one or more jobs. Their income is coming from employment and things like that. So those are the things that I really like to be able to stress when I go out and do presentations to the general community.
I'd add that the survey was 8 pages, and it is voluntary. Not everyone filled every single page, but most people did. And as Rebecca said, just only elevating, like, amplifying what Rebecca said, it is the partnership in the community. You know, it's the Darlas that are out there that, like, you know, got the survey out to the people that would be willing and, you know, had good information to provide, you know, to the rest of us in terms of what their lives are and what priorities are.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate the information.
Thank you.
All right, our next agenda.
Very valuable information.
Yes. All right. So speaking of Darla, you are up next with our legislative update before we go to item number 4, which is our legislative priorities. So let's hear it.
Well, there you go. So don't have a ton to share with you tonight. We do have our candidates forums that are scheduled, so I wanted to let you know about those, and I will get this sent out to Trish, so they all go out to you. They're going to be held virtually this year again, so we're doing each district differently. So the 49th Legislative District will be held on October the 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. Here we go. Legislative District 17th is going to be held on October the 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. The 18th Legislative District is going to be held on October the 18th, same time, 6 to 8 p.m. And the 20th Legislative District is going to be held on October the 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. In the 20th Legislative District, so as we've done redistricting this year, a whole lot more of the 20th District came down into Clark County. And for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, the 20th Legislative District is pretty important because of Senator Braun. He's one of our, he does a lot to support individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities in our legislative sessions. And, but with the 20th district, they have no, there's nobody running against them. So this really, for the 20th district, it's not going to be a legislative, candidate forum. It's really going to be more of a legislative, time just with our legislators. They're the only ones running. I will get those save the dates and links for everyone to sign up. We would love to have you participate. We're currently working on our questions as we speak and trying to move things forward. The other thing that we've done is the North Star Group, which is that large group of advocates from around the state that's been meeting for well over a year now, came up with a list of 10 priorities. We at PEACE and many of the other parent coalitions around the state took those 10 priorities and sent them out to their members to have them vote to see what their priorities were. So out of the 10 North Star priorities, the ones that came to the top for Southwest Washington Clark County, the number one priority is that family homes be offered as a residential option for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. That actually, what that does is it changes the criteria of individuals living at home so that the family home could be identified as their residential placement. And that would allow the adult with disabilities to qualify for supervision hours, which currently are only available in residential settings. The family home is not currently considered a residential setting. So trying to really find creative ways to get those supervision hours that so many individuals seriously need. The next one that came up was to give individuals and families the option to have an open waiver or a flexible waiver to use money towards services that best fit them and their loved ones. This is something that we tried a little bit back in Clark County in the, I'm going to show my age. I want to say it was like 2003, 2004, 2005. We tried to do some direct service choice type thing. But it wasn't a state-level waiver option. It was something that when Mary Strela was the director, we were trying out here locally. Families across the state were hearing that a lot. One of the questions is, if a flexible waiver was to be put into play, which it can be, they have one in Oregon, but you still can only purchase services through contractors that are currently contracted through DDA. So I believe that some individuals think there might be more flexibility in it than what there actually is. The next one that came up was funding for scattered-site housing throughout Washington. Again, as Patrick was saying, and when Rebecca gave her overview, housing is such a huge issue. And so that really was one that came up. And then the prohibition of students from being isolated at school or while under school supervision. So really we had worked on those restraint issues for several years, and this is really now about the isolation issue. And then one that will make all of our legislative priority list, even though the individuals who responded to the survey, if it was forced on the survey, but I'm not sure everybody understands what it is, and that's caseload forecasting for all
DDA waivers so that the number of people expected to be eligible for the waiver in the upcoming year is forecasted and funds to allocate that number of services is automatically provided by the legislature. That's something that would make such a huge game changer in Washington State. Right now, for every dollar we get, we have to go advocate. And developmental disabilities is one of the only social service programs in the state that is not currently forecasted. If we could get forecasting for the developmental disability services, it would be a game changer for all service systems. And that's about all I've got.
Darla, what is the caseload for DDA services now?
I am not sure. I can check on that and get back to you. Last I heard, I think it was like 58,000, but that was several months ago, and I'm not sure I'm remembering the accurate number. I'll give an accurate number and bring it back to you. I do know that there was 14,000 on the waiting list for services, and out of that, it is 50-some thousand that's on the DDA caseload. And out of that number, there's only like 4,200 or something like that, that are actually living in residential services. The rest are living with family members or something similar to that. So we have some huge areas of need in our state.
And so for the case managers, how many clients are they serving? Average.
Is that a couple hundred? No, I think it's 75. Okay. Do we have a DDA case manager here? I think it's 75. Okay. I'll get all of those numbers and get them to Trish so she can get them out to you.
All right, does anybody else have questions for Darla?
Are they going to lose any of the people that are on caseloads now with their case managers? Are they going to drop any of those, or are they going to continue to keep what they've got?
So we are at the part of the year, Patrick, where developmental disabilities is sending their decision packages, so that's what they're requesting for our next budget from the state. They're sending that to their higher up, which is DSHS, who gathers them all up and sends them off to OFM. Anyway, it's all in part of the process of getting ready for the governor's budget to be released, which typically is the third week in December. We're really not going to know until the governor's budget is released, but our state is bringing in lots of income right now with sales tax and different things. So I would not anticipate there being any cuts at this particular point in time unless we see some drastic changes.
Well, because, you know, I always ask that question because, you know, that concerns me because I'm one individual who I work with, and I need all the help I can get with, you know, with through DDA, and I have a lot of support through them. And if anything should be cut, or if I should be cut off completely for some reason, that would be detrimental to my situation because, you know, I need all the, like I said, I have basic needs that I have, and I've been concerned about that for a long time, if they were actually going to go in and do any of that.
So, Patrick, historically speaking, after somebody qualifies for DDA at age 18, now it's before your 21st day. They've changed that. But once you've qualified then, generally speaking, historically speaking, that person then continues to be eligible throughout their life, unless they move away and have to come back in and go through re-eligibility. So as long as
right.
they stay in the state of Washington and
right.
stay the way they have been in the past, it has been consistent that people would be able to stay on, that they would maintains those individuals in service.
Right. Well, because the reason I also ask that question is because I live on my own. I have no roommates. It's just me, myself. And if for any reason they decided to do that, like I said, that would be very detrimental to me. And I'm sure a lot of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities just like me probably feel the same way, because I always have people coming to me asking me, are they going to cut us off? And I said, you know, I really don't know that. I don't think so.
It was said to the board.
But
yeah.
With the way things are these days, I guess you kind of say that nothing is guaranteed for sure, you know.
We can add it.
I would recommend you get in contact with your
talking about
and join people first in sale and work with, with the other advocates to make sure that does not happen.
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I worry about that.
Not for this year.
I couldn't.
This is the first
I couldn't turn to family for anything.
We'll
like I said, I have very minimal family, and
does
you
that
know, I couldn't turn to my grandmother. The only one I could really turn to probably would be my sister, but even that is not a possibility because.
So this is just the start. Of
you know, it's, I live on my own, and I'm just one person. And if for some reason that was to happen, that would be a scary thing because. You know, I always have those fears. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I'm not alone when I say this. I'm sure there's other people that fear the same thing I do, because I've had people come to me, like when they get letters from Social Security, they're like, well, what is this supposed to mean? I don't understand this, you know, and does that mean we're being cut off, or what does it mean in general? I mean, I get that seems like an awful lot throughout the week. Even when I'm at work sometimes, I have clients that will come up and talk to me about that and ask me what it means, and I'm like, you know, I wish I had better answers to provide than what I do, because I told them, I said, I know that it sounds bad from when they write a letter and send it to you, because the way they make it sound is it always sounds like it's bad news when they do it, and I'm like, I don't understand a lot of it. I mean, I'm still learning myself as time goes on.
All right. Thank you so much. Yeah, Patrick, it is important that everybody gets the resources and the supports they need so they can problem solve situations as they arise. But let's talk now about our advisory board legislative agenda. I have a couple things in front of me, and I don't think we have them to share on the screen right now, right, Chris?
We're going to pull it up, so just keep going, and we'll get it.
things that have been important in the past is under the umbrella of employment, maintaining the employment funding, as well as maintaining the funding for individuals that are transitioning out of high school and into the hopefully employment setting. I'm not sure how much of an effect, because it's still relatively new, the Job Foundations program is going to have on students being in awesome positions to acquire or have employment while they are transitioning out of high school. Tricia's going to pull up the agenda that I'm talking about right here. Our other priority has been housing and residential supports, which Darla brought up, the having homes, maybe we can add a bit about making homes where people are currently living, private family homes, residential options so they can qualify for some support services through the state, some support hours. And then our third item on the agenda from previous times was the aging population here in Clark County, not only with families that help provide care to people with IDD, but also the population in general. And so based on what you just learned from Darla, or what we've talked about in the past, or what we have contemplated, let's hear some thoughts from all of you all.
That's the right one.
I just lost my screen, so I'm not sure if there's a hand up. And we've got Lindy, Laura, Walt, Lori, Walt, Patrick, Mary, no, Mary's not here. Ted. Any thoughts? We're going to want to talk about this tonight and then finalize our thoughts in our next meeting.
Walt's got
a
stand up.
I
have
all.
I'm getting some feedback. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that the same issues are applicable this year as in past years. The one thing that continues to concern me is the needs of those people that are aging, because the population as a whole that has been working may not have the retirement programs, may not have Social Security, and so as a consequence, they may need some additional support.
Okay, thank you, Walt. Very important. So we've kind of got a split screen going on there. You can kind of see. Any other thoughts?
Housing is still a big one. I honestly have to say, I mean, I get approached with a lot of housing issues, and I know it sounds repetitive, but, you know, I hear a lot of the same things from different people, that housing is a must, you know, because there's such a high, like a high demand for housing.
Okay, so I hear that we want to keep something related to housing and maybe incorporate some of what Darla just shared with us about being able to provide support to people that are continuing to live in their home residence. And what else do we have? Any other ideas?
My only idea would be to, because housing is such an issue, I mean, it's not just necessarily for people with disabilities, but also because I work with students, I mean, this is a concern. So for people that may be feeling like housing caps all of their resources and there's nothing left, perhaps we could explore coalitions with fair housing for housing advocates in the county. That would be extremely helpful. I mean, I know that there is, there's like lower income or budget housing or budget friendly housing that is part of the county's strategic plan. But to have some of that devoted to, you know, people with disabilities, people who are just even, you know, people who are, you know, first generation college students or whatever. But it does seem that every conversation I have with people these days, housing does come up. So maybe ratcheting up a couple of other advocacy organizations would be a good thing to do.
Yeah,
and I agree with that. I also think on the housing subject, you know, people who live alone in their own homes kind of have some supports to help them keep their homes because, you know, down the road, I'm not worried that I'm going to lose my house, but, you know, with the way things are, you never know if that's going to happen or not. And me being by myself, those are kind of where my concerns are leaning towards more with the housing part and the affordable housing act, because I just moved in where I'm at, and I heard that it's going to increase to almost $900 a month, and I'm sitting there scratching my head thinking, can I do this?
Yeah, and it becomes a like housing and living on your own and aging, and so have those kind of merged together to create a dual challenge.
They
yeah, and so...
They don't take into... They don't take into effect that you also have to pay utility costs. So it's like if you own your home, you've got water, sewer, garbage, you know, you've got all the other access insurance, you know, all the things that that apply around housing. I mean, those are all things that, you know, that need to be taken a serious look at if they could develop some way to help people that are, that own their own homes with some kind of programs to help assist in that area. I mean, I don't know what can be done and what can't, but, you know, they don't take that into account with utility costs sometimes. And they need to take a serious look at that before they jack up the rent, you know, like three times the amount that you can pay.
Yeah. All right, I see a couple other hands
you're
up.
You're limited.
Oops, sorry. I Walt, your hand's up, and Darla, yours was up. Did it go down?
Well, I'll cut right in front of Darla if you don't mind. You bring up some very good points, and one of the questions I have for Ted, is there still this prohibition against ADUs that seem to be very common in Clark County, and I don't know about other counties?
I'm not sure what you're talking about, Walt. We had no trouble building ours, except that we couldn't put wheels on it.
Okay,
the city, but I don't know about, and I never heard about this not being able to count someone who lived in a home. I was wondering about whether that applied to Youngsting or not. What Darla was talking about, yeah, I'm not aware of. We had no trouble getting our ADU. Had to follow certain rules, and if we wanted to put wheels on
them,
but they wouldn't let
us. That's fine. I was under the misunderstanding that it was a challenging process for people to get approval of that.
That could very well be, but it wasn't a problem for us in 2 weeks.
It may vary by jurisdiction. So the city of Vancouver, I know, has done some work. I'm not sure about the county or other city jurisdictions.
Thank you.
Okay. So it kind of sounds like there's consensus on the three kind of big, bold topics. In the past, we've always tried to kind of keep it succinct, not ask for too much, but maybe we want to do a little tweaking on the asks as far as the components of employment, housing, and aging. Looking at alternative ways to support people that are in their homes, whether it's the resources they need to maintain the peripheral expenses or getting support in the house as somebody would if they were in a different kind of residential option, continuing employment with young adults, supporting their employment as well as transition students, and then what we had, I don't know if you could read that tiny font, for aging, what we had written was given the demographic imperatives of the longer life expectancy of adults with intellectual developmental disabilities, and the aging of the baby boomers, a growing challenge exists to address this population's later life needs. People with IDD are aging at unprecedented rates and have unique health and service and support needs. Research has also noted associated with aging caregivers and poorer health in caregivers who are people of color is how we had wordsmithed that last year. And so I don't know if there's a need to want to update that or add some more information, or modify it. Any other thoughts for the good of the order while we're talking about it tonight? Well, is your hand still up, or is it just still up? Give it a comment.
I didn't lower my hand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? Lindy, having any thoughts, or Lori anymore?
I am cold.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Not really.
Yeah.
No thought. Brain's kind of, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. So are we ready to move on for the good of the order? Okay. Coming down to the bottom of the list. And so we're at that time of year when board members may be up for a new appointment. And so as Patrick mentioned early on in the meeting, that our loss is going to be Pilots County's gain. But we need to assemble a recruiting committee. I know not all of our board members are present, but once there's a call for people interested in joining our DDAB, we need a committee to gather and do a little meet and greet. Anybody want to volunteer?
Can I just share? I'm on it. Yeah. I just wanted to share a few details, if that's okay. So this year in particular is we've got a large number of our advisory board members, terms who are expiring. So it would be up to the remaining advisory board members to, be the ones that would be, on that committee. So, the people whose terms are expiring, and we will have a couple of actual positions to fill because as we know that we have a few board members who will be either moving to other places or riding off into the sunset. But the people whose terms are expiring this year are Walt, Meredy, Dawn, Patrick, Ted, and Bob. And so it would be up to the remaining board members if you are so inclined to help me with the recruiting committee, I would be ever so grateful.
And yours is because you filled somebody else's spot.
Yeah, and Bob is one of our newer advisory board members, but he filled a unexpired term, so that's why he's kind of up so quickly. But we are very hopeful that as many advisory board members will reapply as can.
Will they need to reapply?
Yes, the advisory board members whose terms are expiring, if you do want to continue on the advisory board, our county manager's office does request that you will be reapplying. And I'll make sure that y'all know when it's posted and when to do that. So don't do it just yet. We got to get it posted first.
You just need to polish off your resume.
It's easy to do. You just, update what you've done. But I can volunteer for recruitment.
Thank you. Thank you, Lori. Anybody else?
I appreciate that, Lori. I'm going to be starting a new job, so my time is stretched really thin.
Okay. And so likely the meetings and all that would be in January?
I'm hoping to get somebody in place by January, so they would be happening between now and January.
I know.
I'm sorry, I have.
Yeah. So if you're on and if
sorry,
you're.
I have to leave the board.
Yeah. Yeah, so if your term is currently expiring.
Well, I suppose if you're leaving the board, then you might still be able to help us with recruiting new members while you're still on the board. So I guess I shouldn't exclude everybody whose term is expiring. So, yes, so that would be an opportunity.
I know. I'm trying to figure out
who said that I'm leaving.
People that is leaving, and I'm probably one of the people that Trish said is riding off in the sunset. and as a matter of fact, I won't be at next month's meeting or at the celebration because I will be in the outback of Utah and vacationing there and seeing what Mother Nature has and all that kind of neat stuff. So I won't be able to participate in the recruitment aspect. I can share things with Trish and be of assistance in that kind of manner, but I won't be going beyond December 31st.
Well,
that's great.
Yeah.
Are you going to be there next week?
Yes, I am going to be there next week.
All right. I'm supposed
to. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm leaving because I've enjoyed being a part of this for the 6 years that I've done this.
Yeah. And we're sorry to see you go, Patrick. So I've got my short list of who's left to be on the recruitment committee. And so, Lori, I'm happy to join you on the committee to meet. And then...
thank you.
Yeah.
You, me, and Trish.
Yeah.
That sounds like a perfect committee right there.
Great. Thank you so much, Susan and Lori, for your willingness to help with this.
Okay. One last call. Is there anything that's for the good of the order before we adjourn? Kristen, are you trying to say something? I can't help. Alrighty, everyone. Thank you so much for your participation, your attendance, and we will see board members next Wednesday at the Luke Jensen Sports Center out in Hazeldale-ish, and the rest of you, I hope to see you at Clark College on October 5th. Alright, thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.